first and third Wednesday of each month at 6 p.m. at their office in somewhere near Davis Square, 240B Elm Street, Somerville. For more information, call them at 617-749-1320. And one more thing, a big and exciting thing. There will be an introduction to Kingian nonviolence conflict reconciliation coming up starting this weekend. It's a two-day course in two different locations in Boston. It's an introductory course where participants will receive an overview of the life, work, and teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and explore how his philosophy of nonviolence can be and has been applied in diverse settings across the globe to confront injustice and build towards the beloved community. The facilitator will be Ruth Henry, who currently teaches at Cartagena University in Colombia. And the course takes place. You have two choices. You can either start this Sunday at La Casa de la Cultura in East Boston and then move on to the following Sunday, August 14th, at Encuentro Cinco at 33 Harrison Avenue in Chinatown. Or you can take the course next weekend, Saturday, August 13th, and Sunday, August 14th, both at Encuentro Cinco. Let's see what happens when I press this button. By learning and analyzing Dr. King's six principles of nonviolence and his six-step methodology, students will become familiar with a viable, practical, and historically effective map for how to create lasting social change through nonviolent direct action and dig below conflicts to find true reconciliation. For more information about this course, you can visit transformingconflict.net. You can also register there if you will. It should be they're predicting a consciousness-altering experience. So if you need that, this may be an excellent opportunity. It's 7 p.m. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. You've been listening to What's Left. Thank you for being with me tonight. Tune in again and stay tuned now. We'll stay on this very mood for Music for Human Beings, coming right up on your favorite and most cosmic radio station, WMBR in Cambridge.
music for human. I am a doctor, Jalis Sakran, and I'm thirsty for you. Listen to the children of the night, how they call. The first episode in the month of Ramadan, which we have covered before nearly a year ago. But of course, this means that I am fasting and as desperately thirsty as I might be at the moment, I can only pour the soda for others. No drinking until sunset. The fast is a spiritual exercise. It helps me grow, but not outward. Actually, surprisingly outward. I grow inward also. I become more denser as a person. Here to increase spiritual density with me is Erno. Erno, marhaban.
Hello, doctor. I trust your fast is bringing you new levels of enlightenment every day.
In more way than one, Erno.
Yes, sometimes the lack of a potion can be the strongest potion of all.
Also, it's a pun. Because it's lightenment, light become lighter.
Yes, yes indeed.
I'm here to enjoy this bun with us. Is Aurora. Aurora, marhaban.
Namaste.
Namaste alaik, Aurora.
And thank you for having me again on this show. And does not fasting make you slower?
Well, I think, yes, it does. It does make one slower. Yes. Yes, I see the irony there also. I do feel somewhat slower. It is easy for the body to decide, you are starving. So let's just slow down. Just slow the body down. And then we can consume a lot less food. But we are also less hungry and we are tired all day. If you push yourself through an exercise of will to get up early, to eat a little bit, and then to exercise, to move, then your metabolism will stay high, but you will become hungry very fast. So it is a trade-off.
So by foregoing the physical nourishment, it forces your spirit to focus on spiritual nourishment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, there is a cognitive dissonance that occurs. The body says, why do you deprive me? And I say, because I am not a hedonist. I realize that over the past many weeks, I went to the website musicforhumanbeings.com to listen to the past programs and the archives, and found that in the past many weeks I've been becoming less spiritual, less meditative, less able to deal with the variety of intelligences that I interact with, and my perception of other people had become colored, sometimes strangely. And so I think the fast has come at an opportune time. This is the right time.
I'm very glad to hear you say that. I noticed that you were a bit off over the past few weeks, but I did not want to invade.
Yeah, off.
Your great spirituality allows you to heal yourself, your mastery.
I think that's really important too. It's to be healable, to be open to the possibility of criticism that I hear Aurora saying, you know, that there was a loss of spirituality, and to be always in a place where I can accept that as the advice of a sincere friend who is just trying to stab me in the back. No, I'm joking, of course, merely. Now it is always easy to look for revenge, but not necessary.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Aurora.
And perhaps this is a great moment for us to help some of our listeners, because many of us have found ourselves lost in the woods at some point or another, whether physically or metaphysically or spiritually or figuratively. And it is often difficult to know how to find oneself back on the forest path once again, or better yet, outside of the forest, at a lake or a human settlement.
Well, you know, as a person who has lost himself many, 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 many times, I find that it is particular things that will distract me. And if I can be maintaining the self-reflection long enough to identify those things, it is easy to say to that thing, you do not rule me. To do a meditative exercise and to struggle with it directly. The fast can extend beyond the lack of food and water.
Do you prohibit yourself from other substances, other practices, other thoughts, perhaps?
Aurora, I try to be polite more than usual during the month. I try to be kinder, more forgiving of people. I try to be more charitable during the month. And I try not to use curse words, which I do not out of anger. The expletives, merely because they do not mean as much to me, and they're fun to say. I try to spend the time when I see all of my colleagues eating. I spend that time meditating, playing billiards, and other spiritual exercises.
I must admit I've never billiarded as a spiritual exercise, and I'm intrigued.
Is there a special method involved in the billiard way?
I think that depending on the type of table, one may identify all of the difficulties in life, place them each within their own ball. Not only the difficulties, but all of the major actors in life. So I may place down a single ball and say, this is food. Place a second ball down and say, this is meditation. And then the cue ball represents the own point of attention of the person. The pockets, the past, the things that are now ignored, left behind completely. And the cue represents my personal will, striking each of these things with my attention until they disappear. Occasionally these things will strike each other and I meditate on that. I think about what that means. When food strikes, what was the other thing?
Meditation.
When the two strike each other, I meditate upon the food and meditation and how they relate to each other, how they are antithetical, like a group of frogs. They will never come too close to each other. And there they are together. When I have a lack of one, I focus on the other. That's a way to help, just as an exercise, to be forced to think about things, to let the things mix together naturally. When I permit my mind to focus on these things alone, unaided by a tool, I find that I often group the same things together and do not realize that I am a single person. All of these thoughts, processes that occur, interact in some way. Every bit talks to every other bit, but I am not such an excellent billiards player that I will prevent random interactions from occurring. And when one ball strikes the other and forces it into oblivion, it's symbolic for me. It is an excellent exercise.
It is absolutely beautiful, and it must really help you understand how the whole universe is connected, all your experiences, how one influences the other, how perhaps one day you may eat a turkey and then fail to meditate terribly well, or perhaps eat a turkey and meditate especially well.
Is this a common occurrence when you fast and meditate? Do you begin to notice connections in different parts of your life that you didn't previously realize were there? I know from my personal experience that sometimes it's very hard to realize what one's motives are and why we do the things that we do. Things get very muddled inside our heads, and you could have one reaction that you think is you're reacting to one thing, but really you're reacting to something entirely different. And it's all subconscious.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The ability to ignore something. The ability to completely overwhelm the desires of the body by the will of the mind. It is an incredibly powerful tool. It teaches me so much about myself every year. It's an incredible learning experience. It is a challenge, but I think it is worth doing if you are capable of it, if you are in the right health to do so. Thank you. Cardinal, have you ever attempted a fast?
Not to the extent that you have in this instance and in other instances. I have, for instance, eliminated certain potions from my life from time to time to see how they affected my mood and my well-being and how I viewed the world around me. I have at times eliminated meat from my diet entirely.
What has it taught you, Erno?
What it has taught me is how one's diet can affect one's mental state greatly. For instance, if you eat what they call in my field negative potions, excessive amounts of red meat, excessive amounts of ramen noodles, meaning in more than one family pack in every 3 days, it can change the way you actually think and the way you feel. And it really gives you insight into the connection between your physical self and your spiritual self. And without that, I think, is the important part of any fast. It teaches you how the two worlds interrelate in your one being.
I agree entirely with what you're saying, and I've also experienced this. I have not only cut out food for a couple of days, or at the most 5 days, but I've also restricted certain substances from my diet in order to really understand how these things are affecting who I am, how I feel, how I react, how I think. And it is amazing that we don't realize in our society the extent to which what we put in our bodies influences what our bodies are truly made of. If we consume ramen, we turn into a soggy mess, delicious, but not very nourishing. Fruits and vegetables, we become fresh, and our urine smells strange.
Aurora, I've never experimented with eliminating particular foods alone, only with the entire elimination of all food, all drink.
But you are removing several variables at once.
So it is difficult to use as an analysis tool. But I learn not about the effect of a particular food, but simply the effect of food. It is incredible what portion of my mental energy is devoted to acquiring lunch. How will it be done? With whom shall I consume lunch? Where will I acquire it, and how will I consume it? In what manner? With what tools? How will I clean myself afterwards? How do I deal with the detritus of having voided myself? Will I void myself in a public restroom, or will I find a path to my home base in order to do so? All of these considerations become mild and eventually disappear during the month because I don't have to eat lunch. But some part of my subconscious constantly searches for answers to these vestigial questions. And I find myself arriving at solutions to problems that no longer exist, automatically. This is the effect of routine on a person.
For most of the conversation, we have been focusing on the negative routines in one's life and removing them. But perhaps now is a good time to turn to the other aspect of a fast. Once you remove the negative, you must start replacing with positive ritual and routine. And in a sense, this can be just as important. Once you remove the filler, the non-nourishing aspects. You must cleanse and then let the good flow in like a river. Have you ever had any experience with this? As you mentioned before, you said you opened yourself up to treating people nice and not swearing, and those are good examples. But perhaps there are more.
Absolutely. Gradually, as the month wears on, I find myself devoting unconscious energy to meditation, really to taking the time from the day to think and to reflect on what I have done during the day, how my time was spent and how I might better spend it in the remainder of the day. And I do this, I take the time. It is an exercise which is worth doing always, I think, but which I force myself to do during the month. I do this when, as I said, there is a void because all of the people around me vanish to consume their food periodically, many times throughout the day. Breakfast, lunch, tea, second lunch, etc. Then for all of these moments, I retire, I meditate, and I grow. Grow inward, because I'm not eating, so I can't.
I've actually noticed several people. When we were discussing Ramadan with some people in the streets earlier, and they always responded in the same way, "Oh, I could never do that." And I realized that in our society, we really don't go without food. Particularly in this area, the people who are not homeless, the people who are not struggling day to day, have very rarely experienced true hunger. Almost no one has. And I believe they're missing out on several things. They're missing out on what, on a large part of humanity, and through suffering, in the end, comes great reward.
Aurora, also I think there is a very important difference between the faster and the person who is starving, because there is an element of choice. But I'm sorry, I think I interrupted.
No, and that's an excellent point. I believe it is much easier to fast because you know I've got 3 hours until I can eat. And I've experienced this myself. But a person who is struggling and cannot feed themselves, who is relying on the charity of others or on a windfall, is in constant uncertainty, and that hunger bites perhaps more sharply, because they do not know when it will be over.
I think you have made an outstanding point, Aurora. For when you really think about it, most days in our society, most times people are only concerned with the instant gratification. What happens in the here and now? How can this benefit me before I go to bed tonight? Perhaps this is one of the negative aspects of our world that we as a culture should fast on. That we should focus perhaps on the long-term gains. The ones that may not be as physical and abrupt. And perhaps we should focus on the spiritual, the long-term gains.
Absolutely.
The delayed gratification, if you will.
And this perhaps is why we are avoiding discussions on the environment.
It is an incredible power to be able to fast. The person who is hungry, who has no food, and cannot fast is required to beg.
I think perhaps this attitude of instant gratification could be the cause for many problems, both personal and cultural.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, if you look at so many of these companies, if you look at so many of these societies where all the wealth is accumulated within 1% of the population. In this instant, they are very rich. But they are driving the country. They're driving the economy. They are starving the poor. And what will the money mean in 10 years, in 20 years?
In fact, I ask, what does it mean right now?
Absolutely.
This is another good thing about the fast. By denying oneself, it forces one to focus on those around them, to perhaps care more for the poor and the hungry.
To empathize with them in a much stronger, more intimate fashion.
For by denying oneself, you force your mind to no longer focus on I, and perhaps me and myself as well, and force them to focus on them and they.
And us and we.
And you.
And forget about mine or yours. Think about ours and not theirs.
I will consider his and hers, but I am not sure.
The genitive is a strange case.
Indeed.
But the funny thing about fasting that I think people that do not fast do not really realize is that it really gives bad breath, and it's just something that is unavoidable. Like, you know, you try, you brush your teeth, but it is said that the deity, however you like to call it, that the smell of the breath of the faster is more delightful than a perfume, a really nice perfume.
I wasn't going to mention
the breath.
Anything, but
really sorry.
Yes, indeed.
No, it's indeed. Not out of a lack of trying.
Well, it is all of the poisons that are being expelled from your body.
Through the mouth, it's really unfortunate. I met a man earlier today. I was sitting in a park, and there was a man there eating, and after he finished eating, he pulled out a cigarette, and he said, "Do you mind if I smoke?" I said, "No, brother, no. Do you mind if I fart?" It's the same air. It's a new habit. I should have said, "Do you mind if I breathe?" Because I'm fasting.
I find it strange that you asked him. Well, in other circumstances, I've noticed you just don't ask.
Let us avoid confrontation. Perhaps we should move our minds back into the sphere of personal understanding. One of the great things about fasting, depriving yourself of food is that you do have all of these mental cycles that are freed up from all of those questions about what you're going to eat, who you're going to eat them with, and whether or not you will stain your new clothing. And you free them up so that you can look inwards, into yourself, into your soul, understand yourself in new special ways, and especially because you are feeling so relaxed and so zen, you can really allow your mind to slowly make its way to a goal, which really helps you understand the way that it works.
You know, it occurs that I have been enjoying your companies so much that I have not invited our listeners to join us with their company. There is really such little time left, but it seems wrong not to. It is 617-253-8810, callers. 617-253-8810. And do not be afraid, in spite of all our discussions about breath, you will not be able to smell it through the phone.
Not yet.
It's such an interesting idea that this technology would appear. Oh, and also I wanted to say that I met a person whose hands were very dry. Very dry. Ultra super dry. And I said to him, why? Why it's so dry? He said to me, because I apply hand sanitizer constantly. And this is a fast which I encouraged him to make. I won't eat or drink. Why don't you stop with the hand sanitizer? It's very bad. Caller, marhaban.
Hello, is this greetings?
It is greetings, caller. Hello, and welcome to Music for Humans.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for being had, caller.
I was wondering, how does gum chewing fit into this paradigm?
Well, I personally am against gum chewing during the fast for a number of reasons. It is actually very difficult to do because it is wearing on the jaw. I'm not sure why, but it's very, very tiresome. And it prepares the stomach for food which never arrives. So it actually does raise the metabolism. It also makes me a lot hungrier when I've tried it. I think it is also dubious because some gums, and the co-host may be able to correct me, they contain a large quantity of sugar, which I think would violate the principle of the fast.
5 calories.
I do notice some gum wrappers sometimes blowing around in the city air, and I think they may collide with flying birds as well, and that's probably a bad thing, so I'm going to remove gum from my life.
So you are performing a gum fast.
I didn't know if it was cheating or not.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure.
It all depends on your intention, really, and let me point out that gum wrappers are more likely to be a problem for smaller insects or crickets than they are to be a problem for birds.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
But I
also had another question.
No, of course, Colin.
About footwear.
Please.
I see sometimes people wearing the toning sneakers, which are like little rocking chairs for your feet. And I just think that they're awful for the environment, and there's no way they could tone one's body.
Well, caller, let me say, as someone who has had many experiences with various footwears, these little rocking chairs, they're just like walking on sand on a beach. And if you take a moment and walk around in your shoes, perhaps sneakers, and then you take those sneakers off and you walk around in your feet rather than in your shoes, you'll realize that the difference between those toning shoes and your normal shoes is as the difference between your sneakers and your feet. So if all of us want to walk around and run around optimally, we should do so with as little foot clothing as possible.
Caller, I wonder why it is poor for the environment?
I believe it's excess polyurethane material that will end up in the landfill. I tend to think a barefoot direction is a better option.
That also seems ideal to me. I think that that minimalism is very attractive. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm.
Now, the only issue is that you must be able to walk on broken shards of glass, on all sorts of infectious materials without ruining your feet.
On spit and the street and the street.
The street, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, I can see how that is the modern urban version of hot coals. Very 2011. I like it. Thank you so much for the help.
Thank you,
brothers,
Colin.
And sisters.
Thank you, Colin.
Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Also be well.
Goodbye
please.
Now.
Thank you.
As-salamu. That was really nice. It's 617-253-8810 if anyone else would like to be nice to us.
And please embrace us with your questions, with your comments, with just the sound of your breathing on the phone.
Yeah, if you'd like to call and just breathe, I think actually that would be really nice instead of this didgeridoo, because it's a little difficult also to hear this. If you turn down the didgeridoo. No more didgeridoo. And I really should be a little more tolerant, but it sounds really wow. That's nicer.
You have to be in the right mood for the didgeridoo.
Didgeridoo. Yeah, it's a strange sound. It's very beautiful also. But listen to this. This is... What's this? It's like eating.
It's like a beautiful summer evening. Just hours after sunset.
You know, it occurs to me that when I like to break my fast with just a nice glass of water and something very sweet, there is a peculiar feeling when your body receives nourishment for the first time in the day. And people who do not fast, although their stomachs are always full, they never experience this feeling. There is a peculiar feeling that I get when I answer the phone and there's a person there. And at the moment let's try again to have that feeling. Caller, marhaban. Caller, are you there? I cannot even hear the caller breathing.
Food tastes more real, does it not?
Yeah, weirdly. Yeah. I've had these experiences with food where sometimes I find that I've eaten an entire chunk of meat that I've killed with my own hands, and I can't find any of my rings. That really worries me. Usually they're in my pocket. I think sometimes they've slipped off because of the fat. I always worry that I've accidentally eaten one. And I wonder what powers it would confer upon someone who could eat a ring.
That's very interesting.
Yes. It is interesting, Aurora. Strange, you cannot declare it to be interesting for someone else. So I wonder if the listeners also consider it interesting, and then I answer myself, of course.
I meant more along the lines of...
Please move on. Well, that's optional. Anyway, what I was going to say is that after eating a large chunk of well-prepared meat or other foods, that there is a moment, if the food is bad, where it sits like a stone in the stomach, like a big sack of concrete, just mixing and weighing me down, like concrete, really. And then other times, the food is perfect, and I consume it, and my cells, the individual cells in the body, seem to sing, going, yep, yep, just very happy to have consumed the food.
I know exactly what you mean by this. And in my research, through removing one variable at a time, I've come to the conclusion that it all comes down to folic acid.
Yeah, folic?
Folic acid.
Tell us about this acid. Is it truly an acid or is it a nomer?
It's a folic acid.
A very specific folic?
And I'm not sure whether you should add more folic acid or cut folic acid out completely, but one way or another.
Well, if one doesn't work, you can always then try the other.
Exactly. And so that is my experiment this week, is with folic acid.
Let's bring a caller on. Again, 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Hello to you, caller.
Thank you for breathing with us, caller.
I just came. The feeling I get when I have these sexual excretions from my rod, it's like... Every muscle in my body spasms at once as the fluid pours from my orbit.
That's gross, Connor. Anyway, so the acid that Aurora mentioned is folic acid, which is B9, vitamin B9, as our research department is telling me. B9. Yes, B9.
And this is why you feel so relaxed, perhaps, after consuming it.
Because it is...
benign.
Benign. No.
That was my own little attempt at a pun.
But I like it, actually. And it's easy to remember. It's folic because it is benign.
I believe I've seen cans of B8 being sold places.
V8?
Oh, it's V.
B.
There's 8 something or others in the can, and it's supposed to be good for you, but...
Probably has a lot of salt.
Probably.
I believe we're all feeling a little giddy today.
Well, I haven't eaten. What's your excuse?
The sun is out. The wind is soft and cool.
It really is a beautiful day today.
Absolutely gorgeous.
And sanitizer is strange. So where I was walking earlier today, there were just attached to the wall, just, you know, there are hand sanitizer stations which automatically dispense fluid.
So I've seen these things.
Mm-hmm. And they do, and they have two effects. They are like soap, but without water. And
I've seen these things also near sinks. I've always wondered why they were there.
Near sinks?
Yeah, near sinks.
That is ridiculous, because I think the entire purpose is soap without water. It does dry the hand.
Yes.
What did you do? Let me try to embrace it this time instead of simply becoming frustrated.
Feel the vibrations.
It is a weird sound. Why does it sound like this?
Embrace it, feel it as if it comes from within. From your stomach, perhaps.
Okay, let's all do that. Take another call at 617-253-8810. Put in as many zeros as you like. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
I was wondering about the use of hair dryers. If it heats up the outer layer of the human mind too much, will it make one more likely to crave ice cream, Otter Pops, and other frozen treats?
Well, caller, have you ever tried a hair dryer?
Occasionally I use a hair dryer, but this was more for people that I know with longer hair.
Well, I have a lot of hair, and Aurora also here has quite a bit of hair. Erno is hairless. Erno, I wonder, have you ever used a hair dryer? And if so, was it to increase your desire for frozen treats?
Well, doctor, yes, I have used a hair dryer, but I don't believe there's a correlation between my current hairlessness and the act of drying it in the past.
Of course, I did not mean to imply that you never had hair, just that you probably don't remember it.
Yeah, it was indeed a long time ago.
Aurora, do you use a hair dryer?
Well, I usually don't use a hair dryer, but I have in the past. And I believe that it was in the summer. So by that virtue, yes, when I used the hair dryer, I craved frozen treats.
So you do not use a hair dryer in the winter?
I'm not sure what the question is.
The question is, does the hair dryer, by heating the outer layer of the brain, increase the desire for treats, both frozen treats specifically, or color?
I see.
I would say that is indeed probable, if not almost certain, but the correlation between hair drying and baldness is...
I did not
dubious
mean
at best.
To, no, of course. I thought that bolder people would use hair dryers lesser.
Well, the caller must consider that usually the hair dryer is used after a warm shower.
Not a cold shower. Yeah,
usually,
that's true, yeah.
I have been second-guessing many of the items in the bathroom closet these days, starting with the hair dryer, all the way down to the water pick.
Absolutely excellent idea, caller. I believe that there's a lot of excess grooming that we go through that we don't necessarily need to, and that perhaps it weighs us down, much as this folic acid may or may not.
Well, I like a good folic acid. It makes me happier. I think that the possibility is likely that over-drying the hair, overheating the head, would increase the desire in a person who associated relief from a hot head with frozen treats and ice creams and lollipops. Caller, what is your favored method of cooling the brain?
Well, often if there's no one in the bathroom, I'll run the cold water for 1 minute and then stick my head under the sink.
But see, the problem is it would wet the hair and then make you again need the dryer.
That's why I had to call, and you enlightened me so much on this particular issue, and I thank you so much.
Well, thank you, caller. Thank you, because I think the learning happened on both ends of the phone call, and a mercy upon you that you do not have to smell my breath today.
Excellent. And you got me thinking about folate acid right now. I'm going to go take a few caplets.
Okay.
Good day.
Very good, sir. Masarama.
It is a good day.
It is. It's only getting better as it is disappearing. Like a really nice juice. I'm not sure if juices are like that, but...
Soup definitely is.
It gets a little colder, a little nicer. Shall we... Do we have one more call time, or no?
Let's do it.
Very quickly. Caller, marhaba.
Hello.
Hello to you, caller.
Hi. I have this thing. I've been not showering for 3 months because I've been wanting to connect myself with the earth, and I've been staying in my backyard. Is this a good thing? Will I connect, or...
Well, I think bathing at times can be important. Also, we have to remember that for the majority of human history, we do not have showers.
Well, my very, very brief answer to that caller is the attempt to connect with a thing by covering yourself with it, in this case, to connect the earth by covering yourself in earth. It is an interesting idea, but it is likely to run afoul. Aurora, your brief, very brief answer.
Caller, shower and hug the ground.
Caller, thank you so much for being with us, and Ma'asalama from us. I'm sorry. Thank you, caller. Aurora, thank you for being here today.
As always, a joy and a namaste.
Erno?
As always, I'm very happy I did not have to fast on your voice this week, Doctor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Erno. I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio, with an emphasis on you, here every Friday at 7 p.m. on 88.1 Wimber in Cambridge. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight, Masrami.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.